This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
This episode contains adult themes and is not appropriate for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
Hello, the world. This is They Will Kill, a true crime podcast. I am Courtney Eck.
And I'm Sadie Eck.
And it's Sadie's night. And we're both in kind of bad moods, but we're not going to let it affect you guys, because honestly, I've been looking forward to this all day.
It's the best part of the day.
It really is. Thank God you people exist, because otherwise I would just continue to be grumpy a little bit.
Yeah. My children were like, what's wrong with you? And I was like, grumpy, dude.
I don't know, dude.
It's in the air. So we were putting our hands in the circle, like baseball style, and on three, say what we want.
Yeah.
And one would be like, say his best friend's name, Evan, and we'd be like, yay, and the other one would be like, nothing, and we'd just sit there silently. Anyway, it helped. We felt better after that.
Well, you guys, go, you guys.
Oh, what do we? They will kill.
What do we have for them tonight, Sadie?
Well, tonight I'm telling you about the story of vigilante killer Marianne Bachmeyer.
Oh, I think this is very well-timed considering what's going on in our country right now. Lay it on us.
So first, I want to give a big shout out to our sweet and very helpful listener, Carolina, who lives in the Czech Republic. She helped me translate a few articles from German for the story, and I could not have done this without her help.
That is incredible. Thank you so much.
No, she like translated whole on ass articles for me.
That's amazing. I would have given up right then. Thank you so much.
I know. Marianne Bachmeyer was born on June 3rd, 1950, and grew up in a small town in West Germany. Her parents fled East Prussia at the end of World War II in 1945 to avoid the Red Army after reports of Soviet atrocities against Germans, which was spreading through the region.
Mm-hmm.
Marianne's father was a member of the Waffen-SS, which was the combat branch of the Nazi Party's Protection Squadron.
Whoops.
Yeah, the daisy. big baddies.
Yikesy, wikesy, as I always say. God.
It's gonna be one of those nights.
Truly.
He had even been rewarded the Knight's Cross, which is the highest award given to members of the Nazi military at the time. I would love to know more about that whole situation, but
truly,
you know what we know about it is that it was awful.
It can go fuck itself.
Yes.
Yep.
So this gave the Bachmeyers even more reason to flee the Red Army's advances. Hmm. Marianne would later tell journalists that she had a very hard upbringing. I mean, like, no shit.
Mm-hmm.
Her father had a rough transition back to civilian life and became a terrible alcoholic. Her parents divorced in 1954 when Marianne was just 4 years old. Soon after the divorce, her mother remarried a man who was a long-haul truck driver. When he was home, he would beat Marianne regularly. She wanted to continue a relationship with her dad, but wasn't allowed to see him unless it was his weekend to have her, so she would skip school and spend time with him.
Mm. And her dad's the Nazi, right? Mm-hmm. Her Nazi dad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and this is just thinking about, like, being born in 1950, Germany, you know, 10 years after the war, like, or no, just five, sorry. Just yep. 5 years after World War II ended, and...
Ugh. Complicated. Lots to sort through. Mm-hmm. Lots of baggage, yes.
So as she got older, she was kicked out of her home by her mother and stepfather a number of times. It was during this time, when she was homeless with nowhere to go, that she was raped for the first time while at a disco. In 1966, when Marianne was just 16 years old, she started dating a classmate who was the son of a wealthy businessman. After a few months of dating, Marianne found out she was pregnant.
I cannot catch a break.
Mm-mm. After giving birth to a little girl, the father of her baby dumped them both, and Marianne was forced to raise her daughter alone. Marianne's stepfather was furious with his stepdaughter for her unplanned pregnancy and sent her away to start an apprenticeship after the baby was born. And I hear that this is a common thing to do for kids that are out of high school, but leaving her newborn baby probably was not.
I would classify that as another trauma. Put that in the trauma section. Mm-hmm. Big one. Big trauma.
Yes. And I'm under the impression that Marianne's baby stayed with her grandparents while Marianne was away, but I couldn't verify that.
Mm-hmm.
2 years later, Marianne got pregnant for a second time at 18.
Oof.
During this pregnancy, Marianne was raped again.
God.
This time, her attacker was caught and convicted of the attack and was sentenced to 1.5 years in prison.
What? Mm-hmm. Whatever. I don't have it in me today, guys.
It's okay. This experience was terribly traumatic for Marianne, and she attempted to take her own life.
Mm.
After this, Marianne felt too unstable and decided to give her oldest daughter up for adoption.
Wow.
And I think she gave the daughter up to her parents, but again, I couldn't confirm that.
Right.
And after giving birth to her second daughter in 1969, she also gave that baby up for adoption.
Mm-hmm.
Things did seem to turn around for Marianne when she met a man named Christian in 1972, and the two fell in love. Christian owned a local pub and did well for himself. Marianne would move in with him and live on his small organic farm.
Yes, yes, now we're talking. Let's stay on this track.
Unknowingly put farm clothes on tonight.
I know, Sadie, if you're on YouTube or TikTok, I'm the farmer and Sadie's the flower patch.
So after a few months together, they would learn that Marianne was pregnant for the third time. At 23 years old, her daughter Anna was born in 1972.
Mm-hmm.
Marianne and Christian decided to keep this baby, and Marianne had a tubal ligation after she gave birth. Things continued to go well for the little family. Anna was raised on the farm, which was full of animals, and Marianne described this as the happiest time of her life. Things got a little tough for the family when Christian bought an excursion steamer, which is, you know, like a large paddle boat,
mm-hmm.
with the hopes of making this his new business. But when that failed, he lost almost all of the family's money.
Bummer.
To help with their finances, Marianne opened a new pub to help them recover. This new spot was in the center of a visitor's district and was a huge success.
Good.
Because they were so busy, both Marianne and Christian worked long hours into the early morning, leaving little Anna alone much of the time.
Mm.
Not much is known about Anna, but she was described as a, quote, happy, open-minded child. It is clear that she fended for herself often and was late or missed school frequently. Marianne had to work long hours late into the night to keep her pub going, so she would usually sleep in and wouldn't wake up in time to get Anna off to school.
Mm-hmm.
On May 5th, 1980, Marianne woke late and realized that Anna, who was 7 years old at the time, was late for school.
Uh-huh.
The two got into an argument and Anna left. Marianne believed she was heading to school, but really Anna decided to skip school and go to a friend's house.
Don't tell me. Do not tell me this is going where I think it's going.
It's going where you think it's going.
Okay.
Unfortunately for Anna, instead of making it safely to her friends, she ran into 35-year-old Klaus Grabowski, who lived next door to her friend.
Mm-mm.
Yep. Here's a little trigger warning for violence against children.
Mm-hmm.
Grabowski was a convicted child molester who had 19 convictions against him.
My heavenly God.
Some of them were for child molestation.
Quick side note. I'm sure we're all watching the Steven Stainer miniseries on Hulu.
Mm-hmm.
If we are good at true crime, we are.
I haven't yet, so I'm not good at true crime.
I mean, it just came out. It's on your list. If it's not on your list, you're not good at true crime. Or you know the story really well because you're really good at true crime. But somebody made a comment in that about how they just didn't care about child molestation back then. Like they were like, you know, and he got off with 3 years or whatever because they just didn't care.
Yeah.
Like it just wasn't a crime.
We're going to talk about that here too. Yes. Yep.
No. I know that in my heart. And I know it's still kind of not a crime, according to, depending on who's on trial. But,
mm-hmm.
man, oh, man. We really effed it up, but we really effed it up back then.
Yes, we did. This is early 80s. Yeah. In West Germany, it's rough. And, I mean, like, everywhere, but yes. He would later tell police that he lured Anna into his house by telling her he had cats that she could play with. Mm. She's seven.
Mm-hmm.
Once she was inside his home, he held her for several hours, sexually assaulted her, and then eventually strangled her with a pair of his girlfriend's pantyhose.
Give me a break.
After murdering Anna, Grabowski put her body in a cardboard box and left it on the banks of a nearby canal. The details of what happened next are a little fuzzy, but reports say that soon after Anna was murdered, Grabowski's girlfriend came home and surprised him. I get the impression that he had already disposed of Anna's body and was cleaning up the crime scene, but I can't be sure of that.
Mm-hmm.
Either way, Grabowski told his girlfriend what happened, and she went straight to the police.
Mm-hmm.
So Klaus Grabowski was a local butcher with a long criminal history. In 1975, he was arrested and convicted of the molestation of two little girls. He was sentenced to time in prison and volunteered to be chemically castrated in 1976.
Wow.
Like the rest of the world, Germany was going through its own sexual freedom movement in the 60s and 70s. Unfortunately, in some cases, the sexual freedom of pedophiles was considered more important than the safety of the children they abused.
Yep.
After going through the chemical castration, Grabowski was able to find a doctor to reverse the castration and bring him back to his full sexual function. Quote, the doctor thought that Grabowski was still too young to give up his sexuality and thus resets a ticking time bomb.
Mm-hmm.
Marianne would later try to sue the doctor who helped Grabowski, but her case was thrown out of court.
Why?
The judge who threw out the case said, quote, a restaurant owner could not be held liable for the possible consequences of serving alcoholic beverages. Like, I get it. I don't know. I mean, it's just like.
Yeah, I would say, why were you chemically castrated? Let's start there. What? Mm-hmm. Not like, excuse me, sir, are you an alcoholic? Because before I serve you this alcohol, that's very different. But if you're a doctor presented with a patient who wants a reversal of a chemical castration, maybe I should look into this a little bit further.
Right.
Anyway.
Yeah. And I'm guessing like voluntary, maybe it was part of his, like, if you do this, we'll give you a lesser sentence. Like, I'm not sure how he wasn't like, me, please, is my guess.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
When police brought Grabowski in for questioning, he fessed up to the murder right away. At first, he wouldn't explain why Anna had ended up in his home, but said that he had not planned to sexually abuse her. Then he had the motherfucking audacity to say that Anna had tried to seduce and extort him.
I'm sure it worked, too. I'm sure the courts were like, well, she was a very attractive 7-year-old.
Right. Luckily, it didn't work. But yes,
thank God. One small mercy. But I'm sure, I'm positive that that defense has probably worked a lot of times, a shocking number of times.
Mm-hmm. No, he told police. Yeah, it really is. He told police that Anna said if he didn't give her 5 German marks, which is $3, she would tell her mother that he touched her inappropriately. His fear of going back to prison was so great, he decided to kill the 7-year-old instead. Because this is how these things happen.
Totally.
A day after Anna's murder, police told Marianne her daughter had been killed. Her already deep despair and anger only grew when police allowed her to read the transcript of Grabowski's confession.
Oh my God.
She was beyond horrified.
Well, you know, luckily Germans are very good at sharing their feelings. Especially back then.
Uh-huh.
So I'm sure she had plenty of support.
Oh, yeah.
Plenty.
Yeah, because she had such a supportive life to begin with.
Yeah, they just tell you everything. Trust us. Our grandmother, our Oma, just loved those feelings. Just rolled right around in them.
Yeah, just held us not while stern. We cried. And
yeah. Yes. Didn't comment on your appearance first thing when you saw her. Mm-hmm. None of that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Love you, Oma. She was great, but she was
She was intense.
Totally. That's the most, that is accurate and loving. I love her for it.
So a year after Anna's murder, Grabowski went to trial. His defense claimed he had acted out because of a hormonal imbalance caused by hormone therapy he'd received after his castration. They conveniently left out the reason why he'd been castrated in the first place.
Totally.
On March 6th, 1981, on the third day of trial, Marianne smuggled a .22 caliber Beretta pistol into the courtroom. Shortly after the trial started for the day, she pulled the handgun from her purse and aimed it at Grabowski's back. She pulled the trigger and shot the gun 8 times until it was empty.
Wow.
Marianne managed to put 7 of the 8 bullets into Grabowski, and he died almost immediately while lying on the courtroom floor.
Unbelievable.
The trial judge said after the shooting, she heard Marianne say, quote, "He killed my daughter. I wanted to shoot him in the face, but I shot him in the back. I hope he's dead." Marianne was arrested on the spot and charged with murder. Anna's murder hadn't received much media attention up to this point, but Marianne's vigilante killing started a media storm. Major news outlets from around the world traveled to Germany to cover the killing. Within just 1 week of Grabowski's murder, Marianne received 100,000 DM, which is approximately 180,000 US dollars.
Wow.
In a week.
Wow.
Yes, she received this much money in donations for her legal costs.
Holy shit.
And while she was in jail, she received thousands of letters from supporters. Many people believed they would do the same thing if they were in her shoes and that she, quote, deserved a medal.
I'm positive I would never take a human life, but I would very much fantasize about it. I'm positive that I would fantasize about it.
Yeah, it's tricky for me, too. It's like, I just don't really think we should be going around killing each other for whatever the reason it is. But I can't say that I don't understand.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I don't really blame her, you know.
Like yeah. But the saying that, like, if somebody killed one of your children, my fury would be unmatched. It would be so.
Well, to sit that close to them in trial and, like.
Yeah, I couldn't do it.
You know, his little shit mouth lying about my daughter and blaming her for the murder and, like,
no.
That would be.
Ugh. Yep.
Marianne would sell her life story for about 250,000 DM to the news magazine Stern. So wow. She's just like making some money.
Vigilante fucking pay dirt. Yep.
After the articles were published, many continued to support Marianne and her actions, but others questioned if Marianne was just a ruthless killer herself. And I will say that from what I could gather, she loved to talk about herself. Marianne did. She didn't talk a lot about Anna. It was mostly about her and her life and the things that she'd been through. And, you know, I don't think she would have killed otherwise, you know, maybe, but
no, that's a lot of trauma.
Yeah.
To have her daughter murdered so heinously.
Yes.
Yeah. That's nobody's surprised. I'm sure.
Edge.
Totally.
So friends would later say that Marianne was considering putting Anna up for adoption soon before she died, and that she wasn't a very loving mother. But again, like,
it's complicated. It's complicated.
Yes.
Getting Nazi dada, like, out of the gate. How do you ever know how to love? How do you know how to do anything or love yourself or yeah.
Yeah.
It's complicated. I'm sure she loved her daughter.
Yeah, 100%.
Period.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. In the lead up to her trial, there was quite a bit of legal debate about whether the shooting was premeditated or not, or whether it was murder or manslaughter. After a long debate, Marianne's initial murder charges were lowered to manslaughter.
Wow.
And just a little side note, it turns out that Germany, and I don't know if it is had or still has, I couldn't find out if it's still around, but they have a, quote, Nazi murder law. they have Nazi murder laws in place still, at least as far as like 2015, 2016. I couldn't find anything more recently than that. That make differentiating between murder and manslaughter kind of tricky. So, quote, "A surviving statute from 1941 means that women who kill their abusive husbands are more likely to be jailed for murder than husbands who beat their wives to death." According to the German Association of Lawyers, the Nazis decided that a murderer was someone who killed, quote, treacherously or sneakily, This means that a man who beats his wife over many years, finally killing her, is less likely to be convicted of murder, which comes with a mandatory life sentence, than to be convicted of manslaughter, which may mean only 5 years in jail. And the argument is that there was nothing sneaky or treacherous about him killing his wife, beating her to death, because it was upfront and direct and might have been expected.
Is that still the case?
I don't know. That's what I couldn't find out.
Holy shit.
I don't think that they necessarily read the law like this, but it is the law.
Mm-hmm.
So it's hard. And that's right. Like lawyers were coming forward and being like, it's really impossible to move forward with a law like this. You know, like it's yeah, instead like, of looking at each individual case and the motive and the, you know, like anyway.
And sneakiness level.
Right. Yes.
Like, did you tiptoe into the courthouse? Right.
Yes.
Like, did you have your back hunched and your little hands out in front of you in a menacing fashion, but also like quietly, like you're holding them out so you're being more quiet?
Yes. Or did you come in and announce, I am going to murder you tomorrow and then do it? Okay. Then that's just manslaughter.
Right. Good grief.
So Nazis defined murder in the light of their belief that some people were inherently weak-minded. It was about defining a murderer as someone treacherous rather than looking at the circumstances of each individual crime. Mm-hmm. The Nazi law favored the strong who murdered the weak. But I think that that's one of the reasons why they spent so long trying to decide Marianne, if she was up for murder or manslaughter. Mm-hmm. Like, was she sneaky or was she upfront about it? Or
was she wearing a cloak or a trench coat, black?
Yeah.
Or dark gray?
And honestly, I think she was a little bit of both. She was pretty sneaky about it, though.
Yeah, but she did bring a gun into a courthouse, and so unless she just carried a gun everywhere, so maybe she, yeah, maybe it was just manslaughter.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe she was a gun. She had a Nazi dada, so she very well could have carried guns with her everywhere she went and then just decided, you know what? I'm going to put this gun to use right now on this guy.
That's right.
Yep.
Well, when I was reading about the the Nazi murder laws, I also read that when East and West Germany came together, East Germany had more like typical laws, like, you know, what we're used to. And they took the West Germany's like Nazi murder laws with them. Like, they decided to go with that side of things.
Wow.
Yeah, we'll have to ask people, do you know if those laws still are in place or did they reform them?
Probably reformed them.
I mean, thinking so too, because it's not in the news anymore. So I'm assuming that they, like, the last articles I could find were saying they were in the process of trying to get these things passed, the new laws passed. And then I didn't hear anything else about it. So that kind of makes me think that they were like, okay, yes, let's do this a little differently.
I mean, yeah, as far as I know, Germans have really, really, really tried hard to distance themselves from their past and also be the best people they can possibly be moving forward. So I would be very surprised if those were still in place.
Although there was one person they interviewed in these articles that were like, well, we don't need to get rid of everything. Like, the Nazis built the Autobahn and we're not going to rip that up. Like, it's not the same thing. These are not the same thing.
No.
Anyway.
Yeah, we can keep the efficiencies, but lose the atrocities.
Yeah.
It's pretty easy to determine. Yeah, we, sir, but what about this chair that the Nazis... atrocities. Put in the atrocities pile. Like, what the fuck?
I know. So Marianne's trial started in early 1983, and she would get on the stand in her own defense. She testified that she shot Grabowski in a dream where she saw visions of her daughter in the courtroom.
Mm.
A doctor who examined her said when Marianne was asked for a handwriting sample, she wrote, quote, I did it for you, Anna, and then decorated the sample with 7 hearts, one for each year of Anna's life.
Mm-hmm.
After a 4-month-long trial, Marianne was found guilty of manslaughter and unlawful possession of a firearm and was sentenced to 6 years in prison.
Wow.
Once in prison, Marianne fell into a deep depression and lost her will to live. She would tell people she just wanted to, quote, get on Anna's way. She ended up attempting to die by suicide multiple times. She drank floor wax, swallowed shards of a mirror, and tried to hang herself.
Oh, buddy.
No. Due to these attempts, authorities decided to let Marianne out of prison early, and she was released in 1985.
Wow.
She just served 3 of her 6 years sentence. Hopefully, wow. Like, they're to get out of prison to go get mental health treatment.
I was going to say, did they transfer her somewhere? They're just like, good luck to you, madam. I don't
know for sure.
Yeah, I'm sure she's not their highest priority.
Right. After her release, Marianne moved to Nigeria with her new husband, who was a teacher. Wow. While there, they lived in a German camp where her husband taught at a German school.
Wow.
She stayed there until she got a divorce and moved to Sicily in the 1990s. In September 1995, Marianne appeared on a talk show where she admitted she had shot the killer of her daughter after careful consideration. Mm. She wanted to enforce the law on him and prevent him from further spreading lies about Anna. A friend of Marianne's who was featured in a separate documentary about the case claimed to have witnessed Marianne perform target practice with a gun in her pub cellar before the shooting. Mm-hmm. So definitely premeditated.
Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, I think we all assume
yes. Right.
Yeah.
So while in Sicily, Marianne was diagnosed with stage 4 pancreatic cancer.
Ugh.
After this diagnosis, she moved back to Germany. Marianne said she would dream often about Anna in these dreams. She would see Anna wearing a white summer dress. She would be picking flowers in an endless green meadow. At some point, Anna would throw a bouquet in the air and call out with a laugh, saying, "Mom, I'm waiting for you. When are you coming?"
Oh, buddy.
Marianne asked a reporter to film the last few weeks of her life, and she passed away on September 17th, 1996. She was just 46 years old.
Wow.
She was buried next to her daughter, Anna.
Oh, bud. God.
And that is the crazy story of Marianne Bachmeier.
She just got it done. She was like, I have seen enough. I have been through enough. I am just going to wrap this up, people. I do not have the time. I do not have the energy. Done
bye,
and done.
Bye.
Bye. You should have put him away after the offense, let alone 19 offenses. Get your shit together,
yep.
People.
Yep. Yep. And the fact that he was living right next to a 7-year-old's best friend. Like,
that's a lot. It's all a lot. It is a lot.
I know. There's lots to pick apart in this one, but I don't think either of us have it in us.
No. We got Nazis. We got pedophiles. We are punching microphones. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What do you guys think, though?
Yeah. Tell us what you think. I want to know what people, what do you know, like, that idea of vigilante killing, you know?
Mm-hmm. I've said this before. I'm like, if I had nothing to live for, you know, like if I lost everything that I cared about, I have fantasized about vigilante justice. I'm like, what would make me feel better? Yep, vigilante shit. And I don't know what, because I can't, like, swish bugs, so I don't know what I would do to people once I got them. But maybe just, like, give them a really bad day or something.
Look at them mean with her eyes.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Just, like, what would I do? I wouldn't want to, like, mess with their car or something. I don't know. I would figure something out.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm too afraid of karma. I wouldn't actually, but it's like, it's a comforting thought to think about doing vigilante justice. Expose them. I don't know. You know what I mean?
Like, yes.
But nobody really cares. They've already been, I don't know. Dexter stuff. Oh, yeah. I would just lay down plastic and stab them in the chest.
Oh, right. Oh, that's fair. That's good.
Oh, my God. So I think we'll save shouty outies because I just know they're not going to be very good. My brain is like this. So that's what you all would get.
Yeah.
So it's too fun. It's too important. And so I'll save those until next time. Mm-hmm. And just kind of in general, I think we're just sort of, well, here's how I feel. I don't feel hopeless. I'm obviously referring to Roe v. Wade. If anyone were like, what is she talking about? Of course, it was like a big punch to the gut. But then I was like, you know what? I'm not going to give them hopeless. I'm not going to give them sad. I'm not going to give them tired. Anytime I feel any of those feelings that they want me to feel because they're a pile of motherfuckers, I'm going to feel angry, activated, or peaceful or inspired to do something for myself or another person. Because you know what? Fuck them. And also, this is the death rattle of some patriarchy bullshit. So it's going to suck in the meantime. We're going to have to get out and make some noise, but we will do it. Let's Zelensky this shit. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, I definitely was feeling like I woke up this morning just like, and then I started thinking, okay, what actions can be taken? What can we do?
Tons.
And there's plenty. So,
tons.
You know,
yes. This is
if you
not
need help. If you,
I will give you a ride to another town. I will drive you to New York. It's fucking
fun.
We
will buy you a plane ticket. We will help get you access to the care that you need.
Yes. Not everyone. A lot of people will suffer, but we'll figure it out. And we are quickly becoming the majority. We, meaning people who don't want to restrict the way other people live their lives and who they love and how they fucking use their damn bodies, and just generally good people. And there are less and less, like, you know, it's just not a white Christian majority anymore. And that pisses them off and terrifies the shit out of them. So they're Hail Marying the hell out of some stuff and whatever. We got this. Let's Zelensky it. Put on your tightest little hot little military pants. You know what I mean? Yes.
Don't really, I mean, no,
look
do that
sideways into a camera and be like, let's go.
Yeah, man. I know. We need some, we need some like kicking tunes right now to motivate people.
Yes. Oh my God. Yes.
Right.
You're ready to motivate. Solved. Civil rights solved. You nailed it.
Yeah. This is our anthem. So you just play that on your loudspeakers and the neighbors will come out and we'll fucking kick ass.
Yeah. My business partner reminded me this morning of when they tried to do this in Mexico and people were out with like riot gear and smoke bombs and shit. I was like, yeah, we're fine. We're fine. Like, you think 2 summers ago was something? Like, fuck with over half of the population of the United States of America. And like, threaten gay marriage and interracial marriage. Like, what? Are you doing this on purpose? They think they're doing it on purpose. You know what I mean?
It feels like they're just burning everything down, see what sticks.
I know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Either that or they're like, we don't want to do this job anymore because it's so hard. Like, the GOP is so intense. Everybody is like, wants you to do things. Everybody's got guns. Every time you go to a rally, it's like, I have to talk to these people. It is so, like, I'm over it. What can we do? Roe v. Wade, for sure. We'll have to go after that. You guys, what about gay marriage? Like, that's still new. Like, there's like 11 loud guys in QAnon that don't like it. Everybody else loves it, but like, fuck it and start out on there. What about interracial marriage?
Oh my God.
Should we go after interracial marriage? Like, that, if we do that, we are done. We can retire. We can go to Hammock Island. We're good.
Yeah.
That's the only plausible explanation for this bullshit.
Yep.
Anyway. Go take care of yourselves. Get yourself a smoothie. Get yourself some yogurt.
Yes.
Get a yogurt bar.
Get some probiotics in your belly.
Mm-hmm. Gut health is important at a time like this.
We aren't clearly two white middle-aged women at this point. We have solidified that fact.
You need some aromatherapy. You're going to some lavenders. You're going to need some weighted blankets help also
signs that say things like live laugh love.
Just put it in a more prominent position in your home and you're fixed. Just chill out. No, let's get activated. Let's do stuff as we are able. If you're not able, then just chill the fuck out, because the rest of us has got you. It's cool. It's fine. I mean, it's terrible and it's not fine, but it is going to be cool and fine eventually, I promise you.
Yeah, we gotta tear shit down to build it back up.
Woohoo! I really don't have time to riot, but I will make it. I will say, I gotta carve out Wednesday from, you guys think, 3:30 to 4:45?
Yeah, enough? That'll work.
Is that enough time?
That's good.
Cool. Pencil it in. Could you send me a calendar invite? Anyway, in the meantime, we'll be back next time with name times. shouty outies, all the usual fixins. Just today, just like raining, ick, everything, poo poo, pee pee, papa, and yes. So, like I always say,
cranky territory.
Cranky territory. We are scoundrels in it. What is it? Planting the flag? Not scoundrels. Like a Kim. God, I'm so glad I'm not doing shouty outies today. Tom Cruise and Kim. What's Kim his ex-wife's Kardashian. Name? Tom Cruise.
Kate Middleton.
Kate Middleton. In the movie where they ride the horses and stick their little thing in the ground.
Legends they're, of the Fall. No.
They're not prospectors. They are guys. Oh, my.
They are homesteaders.
Yes. Yeah, right? Where yes. they pick the land and they ride and really fast Irish, and then they right? get it. Yeah,
somebody's
they,
Irish.
He was a boxer and she was a lady. I don't what know what she that did.
Fucking movie called?
Far and Away.
Far and Away. And it's right? not Kate Middleton. It's, oh my God.
You know, the most famous actress of all time, Kate Middleton.
Oh my God.
Kim Cattrall. Diane Wiest.
Why can I not think of her name?
I can't think of it at all. Not even a little bit. Reese She's Witherspoon. Australian. Starring next to her in lots of
I can't sunshine. Believe this, but I am actually looking it up. This is so embarrassing.
I can't think of it. I cannot. I can't wait to find out what this is.
Well, I just said first wife. It wasn't her. His first. Mother lover. Where is it?
Maybe okay. she doesn't exist. Okay. Maybe we okay. jumped a timeline nope. and she doesn't nope. exist.
She does. Starts with an N.
Nicole Kidman. Yeah. We're going backwards. We're going Kidman. Kim.
People Holy are so shit. Mad at us
they're
right now.
They're furious, screaming. Like they're like people think that the Roe v. Wade protests have started, but it's just our listeners screaming so in the streets, taking to the streets to remind us of the actress Nicole motherfucking Kidman. I'm so glad I didn't do yeah. shouty outy. See, this is what you guys would have gotten.
Oh man, I mean the fact that we got through the episode is pretty amazing.
It really was. Yes. Anyway,
we love you so much.
We do. Make your vigilante plans. Go to Instagram after you're done. Once you get your vigilante plans down in your day planner, in your
yes
journal, then go to Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, or TikTok.
No, and we're just hitting them all. Hitting them
we
all,
are.
Hitting them all.
We are so in love you with know, the TikToks.
We all know how Facebook reminded me of Jeff Bezos for some reason, but I just saw that he, and we all know how we all feel about Amazon, but he just put into place $4,000 for each employee for travel expenses, medical expenses, to help people get access to abortions. And it's like, it clearly, in the thing says, you know. Including right. medical care, including abortion care.
Too little, too late, Bezos. But
I know. Let's start there.
Yeah, that's you a can good, just... That's a something. That is a something. I'm happy to hear it.
Yep, I'm sure his don't ex-wife dock people's like, pages dock people's wages to pay for it.
Yeah, he's like, I'm going to take your health insurance, but I will give you abortion money. What? No, don't do that, dude. You're PR so weird. Yeah. You're so weird. Meanwhile, his ex-wife's like, I'll see that. $4,000 and raise you $11 billion. Brain to Planned Parenthood.
Right.
ACLUs, you get another 50. Totally. Love yeah. her. Love Mackenzie Scott. Thank God. So thank God he married her and then divorced her. Anyway, go to our social media at They Will Kill. You can send us an email, theywillkillpodcast@gmail.com. You can go to our website, theywillkill.com.
Yeah. You can rate, review, subscribe to us, please.
Yes, please do it.
And thank you, AJ Bergans, for your music.
Thank you very, very much.
And remember...
I wrote one down. Oh, yeah, I sent you this video. The guy was talking about how people insult the most powerful parts of you because some people are committed to a world that's dying. I sent that before Roe v. Wade. But it's true. Some people are committed to a world that's dying. I am not.
We should post that on our social media.
I am not personally committed to a world that is dying. I want a living world, and I want you all to live in it and thrive. And so anytime someone tears you down, be like, why are you so attached to killing the world, dumbass? Why? Yep. But yeah, it's a lovely way to think about it.
Yeah. We love you guys.
Your lovely there. Ways to think about it. Oh yeah, we got this. And next week, names, same.
Same. That's what we always say.
Names, same. Yep. We love you guys.
We love you guys. Hope hope we can think of Nicole Kidman next week. Bye.
Bye. Goodbye.